And welcome back to the Bicycle Indiana podcast, Life Behind Bars. Margaret B. here, Executive Director, Part 2 of the BMX discussion in the state of Indiana. Like I had mentioned in the previous episode, very common topic, very common comment that I received from individuals that I had met over the last couple of months, maybe a year or so. But there's a huge history about BMX racing and riding here in the state of Indiana. And our first episode talked with Brandon Medley, who is a racer himself, grew up with BMX and is still racing right now. And then this next discussion is somebody that he connected me with. It's a young lady who is an elite World Cup, incredible racer. And she is a really talented bike racer, and she absolutely loves BMX racing. And this discussion talks about racing at the level that she's at, but also she is from Indiana and still lives here in Indiana and trains here as much as she can in the state, but also travels to other different areas to train as well for her racing. So I hope you enjoy this discussion. Again, if you are not a member of Bicycle Indiana, please take a moment and go to our website, www.bicycleindiana.org. Join. You can also go to your local BMV and be part of the license plate program. Other than that, I hope everyone enjoys this discussion. Follow us on social media and have a great day. And welcome back to the Bicycle Indiana podcast, Life Behind Bars. This is the part 2 about BMX in the state of Indiana. And I have a lovely lady on the call that is an elite racer, and I'm very stoked for her to join the call. So welcome, Carly.
Thank you.
Do you want to take a moment to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Yeah. So my name is Carly Kane. I've been racing BMX for almost 15 years, which is insane. Nice. I love the sport. I've been able to, you know, travel the world and meet amazing people because of BMX. And it's just a great sport. So
on the previous podcast, I interviewed Brandon Medley, who is out of Indianapolis and has raced BMX for many years. And he's a very seasoned rider. I don't use the word old, but seasoned rider. And we kind of talked about the history a little bit about the history of BMX in the state of Indiana. And I was really excited to connect with you because you are still currently racing. One, you're a female that is killing it in, you know, the racing scene. And I have lots of questions about that. But my first question is where are you from, or you're originally from Indiana? Are you in Indiana right now, or are you out of India, or, you know, living? You don't have to tell our listeners exactly where you live, but
yeah. So I've always lived in Indiana. We live like in Guilford, which is, I don't know. I don't know if anyone would know where that is. It's close to kind of like Lawrenceburg.
Okay.
If anybody knows where Perfect North Slopes is, it's close to Perfects. But yeah, kind of the middle of nowhere. So I don't really have tracks close to me. I have to drive pretty far to ride.
Well, that's a question I have later in the call. I'm in Terre Haute, if you've ever been to Terre Haute.
Yeah, I've driven through.
Yeah. So how did you get into BMX? How did it all start?
So my dad raced motocross as a kid, and one of his friends from high school, I believe, ran a track. His dad ran a track down in Cleves, Ohio.
Okay.
So that's where I started. And the track is still there. I don't ride there a ton because it's just a bit smaller. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a professional athlete, usually I have to go to a track that has, you know, just bigger jumps, bigger facility. But I still like to go to Cleves every now and then. So that's where I started. It's a lot closer to home, obviously. We weren't driving 2 hours right off the bat to ride.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, my dad got us, my sister and I actually both raced. He got both of us into it. Nice. And she was like gung-ho. She wanted to race it. She was like 100% in. I was not interested at all.
Really?
But it ended up that I love it and she did not like it. She plays tennis. She's a phenomenal tennis player, but yeah.
That's great. So Brandon and I talked a little bit about the different tracks in the state. And so why I contacted Brandon and you and some other people that raced BMX was I travel all over the state. I meet people like you, riders, I go to events. And the number one topic or comment people were making were, I used to race BMX in the 80s and the 90s. And it kind of prompted this thought in my brain of like, well, where did it go? I'm originally from Detroit. You know, I moved here about 8-9 years ago. And I never really paid attention to the BMX scene. And like I said, it just prompted the questions like, where did it go? And I went up to Kokomo and you know, some of the bike shops talked about it up there. And I know that there are races still going on, and Brandon and I talked about that. But it's just really interesting how the state has kind of, you know, shifted. What are your thoughts on how BMX is now compared to, I mean, I don't want to say that you're really young, but before you were born, probably there was a ton of racing, and now it's not as much. You have to go out of state.
I think it's not just the state, it's everywhere. So I think it's just kind of a countrywide thing. I think the sport has changed a lot. And so it makes having facilities a bit more difficult because if you look at tracks from, you know, the 80s and the 90s, it was very like rough and rugged and like, you know, they're riding through ruts and dirt and everything is dirt. And now, like when I go to a track, especially in the States, they typically have what's called slurry coat. And so it's like this mix of glue, sand and dirt. And so they coat the whole track in that. It's basically like riding on pavement, but it takes a lot more maintenance. And I think that you have a lot of volunteers who are, running these tracks and they're not getting paid and it's a lot of work. And so a lot of tracks have kind of disappeared because if a track isn't up to today's like racing standards, they're not going to pull around a lot of riders. And so it's hard to have a group to maintain it. I went down to Louisville one day last year and we worked on the track for, I don't even know, probably 8 hours. And we got maybe like half of a straightaway done. Like it was just so much work. And so I think that's really the main thing, just that the sport has changed a lot, which makes the facilities have to change a lot. And then it's just more work.
And Brandon mentioned that about the volunteers and trying to really immerse it into the community. And if you don't get those volunteers and the community members, you know, it does take a lot of time for a few people to take care of a track. Here in Terre Haute, we have Griffin Bike Park, which if you haven't get a chance, please come down. I will take you on probably the most easy cross country loop ever because I'm a roadie, but I have people that could take you on the fun stuff, or I use quotations, fun stuff. But we have a small little pump track as well as a dual slalom in Richmore, who's also races BMX, if you've heard of his name. He says it takes a lot of time to maintain those dirt tracks, whether it's keeping the water on to keep the dust down. So that way the racing's great. But also just in general, I mean, dirt and the weather, and I know some tracks are paved. So that is definitely something. So right now you are currently racing, which is great. What team are you on?
Yes. So I signed with Huffy for I was their first professional athlete in over 20 years in 2024. Nice. Their first ever professional female athlete. And so I'm riding for Huffy and I've got, you know, some co-sponsors and stuff. But this year last year it was just me and then Nick Bruce for freestyle. This year for racing, it's me and then Nick Long is our team manager. Mm-hmm. And Ethan Popovich, who's also from Indiana, which would be maybe another cool podcast for you. But he's my teammate. So nice. It's really cool. It'll be a super fun year having like two other people with me at races because last year it was just me. Like I was bringing my tent to races and, you know, just hauling it around myself. So it'll be cool to have team members on my team.
So let our listeners know kind of how you got to this point of where Huffy, a big brand, came to you and said, we want to sponsor you. How did that all happen?
It was just like, it's kind of crazy how things work out. It was perfect timing. I rode for DK before this. I signed with them when I was 15 and they were my first real big sponsor and they were amazing. But at the end of 2023, I was kind of like, you know, putting some feelers out, trying to see like where you know, if there's any bigger companies or anything more funding that would be available, because there's not a lot of money in BMX. And so it's hard because obviously, like, I'm traveling a ton internationally. It's super expensive. Race fees are expensive. Yes. I think each day of a national race is $200 to race. Yeah. And if you win the entire race, it's $3,000. Like, so it's, you're not making money unless you are like literally winning everything. So anyway, I had been like, you know, bugging Huffy. I had a couple of meetings with them and I was like, is this going to happen? Like, is it going to happen? And what's going on? And I just didn't really hear back. And I was like, man, I guess it's not going to happen. The day after Christmas, they called me and they're like, hey, we want to do this. And
how exciting.
I was like, oh my gosh, this is so it was like just crazy timing and just so cool. So it was really just kind of a mix of luck and good timing. And I don't know how everything fell into place at that time that it did, because obviously they haven't been in BMX in a really long time. And it was like, I was looking, they were trying to get back in, and it worked out.
And here you are, killing it, which is great. Which is awesome. So are there a lot of women racing in BMX, or is it kind of mostly, to me, I feel cycling can be a male dominated sport. Are there a lot of female teams, a lot of female riders that you're able to race against?
So it's definitely male dominated. We have a pretty good class in the States. So we actually have, I was trying to think about it. We have 7 places for world champs this year. So I was like, oh my gosh, are we going to fill all the spots? And we will. We have 7 women who race internationally at the elite level.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is huge compared to any other country. Like, I think Australia has like 5 girls who are pretty quick, but that's nowhere else has that many racers. So, and I mean, there's more men, but also I think that the girls who are racing at that high level, mm-hmm. are so fast that it's no matter where I go, it's going to be stacked. Like, I'm not going to have like an easy race. You know what I mean? So, especially like on the international scene, like there are so many fast girls.
Yeah.
So it's really cool to be able to, you know, see all these different people who have the same passion from all these different places. And like, obviously we're racing, so we're competitors, but so many of them are my friends too. So it's really cool. But there are a lot of girls, mostly boys, but a lot of girls too.
That's great. So you kind of talked about a minute ago about how you would bring your own tent and now you have a team. Brandon really talked about how the culture of BMX is really important. And he talked a lot about it and how it really brings people together. My background, I don't know if you're familiar with NICA, which is interscholastic grade 6 to 12, getting kids in the mountain bike scene, but the courses and the actual league is more focused on just getting the new rider involved. So that way they try BMX or they try cyclocross or they try other types of racing. But I do believe that biking has this incredible culture to it. Do you want to describe to our listeners about kind of that culture that you experience when you go to races?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you go to a BMX track, well, I'll just give you an example.
Okay.
So my little cousin, I think he's 13 now, and he isn't great at riding a bike. I think he's real wobbly and like, he doesn't play any sports. And the one day he was like, hey, can you take me to the pump track? And this is a pump track, not a BMX track, but it's the same idea. And I was like, yeah, I can take you to the pump track. I have a bike you can ride. Like, we'll go. It'll be fun. So we went to the pump track and it was me, him, and I think a couple other riders who were like pretty good riders. And I think it's really cool because him being there, everyone there was so nice to him, mm-hmm. and was so welcoming. And I think with bikes in general, you don't really get that. Like, you don't have anyone being like judgy or like pushing you away if you're new. Like, people want other people to ride with and people want to see new people on bikes. It's such a cool thing. And it's anyone who rides bikes and loves bikes knows how like amazing any type of cycling is. And so I think that's really cool because I've seen that, you know, especially, have you seen the Dayton Bike Yard pump track?
I have not.
So it's in Dayton. It's kind of like, in a little bit of a rougher area, but you have so many people who come and ride who have never ridden before. And everyone is just so welcoming. And then you have people who, you know, like Tommy Zula, who's Pump Track World Champ, he'll show up and he'll ride with these kids.
Wow.
And you know, like I get to go ride with these kids, and there's so many people that will come and just hang out and ride bikes. And I think that unless you've experienced it, it is really hard to describe. Mm-hmm. But basically BMX, pump track, I'm sure other disciplines of cycling, everyone is just so welcoming. Mm-hmm. And it's just so inclusive for anyone of any age, of any skill level. Like, it's just amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I met at our annual State House Day at in Indianapolis, Jethro. If you recognize that name, he's just, yeah, he spoke and he advocated for us. And I just thought he was the coolest little dude ever. And I bet he could kick my butt on any bike.
So. He's awesome. I love Jethro. I love his family. But yes, like, yeah, he's wonderful.
Yeah. So that's, I love the stories, and I have some more questions in here in a little bit, but I do want to specifically talk about the state of Indiana. There, Brandon on the previous call, kind of talked about the different spots in the state. He obviously said, you know, down in Vincennes, I think Evansville has a track. There's some up north. What are some of the favorite tracks or the places that you can train here in Indiana that you want our listeners to know?
So the only track that I really ride at in Indiana is Columbus, Indiana, because that's my closest in Indiana.
Yeah.
And it's a fun little track. Marion, the college, has a track, but it's not great. They have the limestone surface, which is amazing. Like, anyone listening who has a track, who has a pump track, do limestone, because it's so much less maintenance, because the water doesn't ruin it. It doesn't rut it up. If it does rut it up, you can just rake the limestone back in place. So Columbus did limestone this year, but they glued their limestone. So it's, it like holds together a lot better. Marion's close. Columbus is, I shouldn't say close, it's like an hour and 45 minutes. Columbus is an hour and 20-ish. So that's usually where I go. I've never been to Evansville. I rode up in Warsaw, which I love. Yeah. Absolutely love Warsaw's track. I actually go back up there, I think in, I have to look at the calendar, but I have a clinic up there at some point where I'm going up to coach, I think in June. And then Fort Wayne is also really fun, but I don't get to go up there often because it's not close. It's,
right.
You know, me to go to Warsaw or to Fort Wayne, it's like a three and a half, four hour drive. And so at that point, I'll just go to Louisville.
Yeah. Yeah. I really hope, and I've talked to Rich Moore and Brandon, that just talking about BMX more, and maybe this discussion as well as with Brandon, can really kind of bring some life back to the sport, because I'm just fascinated with the sport, because I don't race like this, and or even ride, you know, a bike that you ride. And I just hope that people can kind of get a glimpse of what excitement is happening in this type of discipline, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So, okay. So I asked you kind of where you race and train. Let's talk about your bike. Let's talk about the bike.
Okay.
So do you want to describe your bike, you know, to our listeners? Brandon did a little bit about his, but obviously a BMX bike is different than your typical, you know, bike that maybe you'd ride on a paved trail or even a mountain bike. So do you want to describe it?
Sure. Yeah. So I am actually on a prototype that I have kind of had some input on with Huffy. So last year I was riding the first generation of the prototype. I got three of them. I did a ton of testing. And then I just recently, like last week, I got the second version of the prototype. And for anyone who is listening who hasn't seen or ridden a BMX bike, it's super light. I think the best way to describe it, it's like, it's low and fast. It's like a Ferrari. Yeah. Like, it's like the Ferrari of a bike.
Nice.
So, I think, do you want, like, you may describe like the actual, like specs of the bike, or like what?
Just a general description.
Like? Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's low and it's fast. I like a wide rear end for my bikes because it makes the bike really stiff. Mm-hmm. That's a really important thing with any BMX bike. You want stiffness so that when you are putting power down, obviously it's transferring, you're not losing anything through a flexi, you know, flexi handlebars or flexi cranks. So I run carbon cranks, carbon rims, titanium bars. So it's, again, very light. Yeah, light, fast, low.
Yeah.
That's what I can describe it.
That's perfect. No, that's perfect. And that's exciting that Huffy is creating things that can really work with you and you're giving them feedback. And so how long does that normally kind of take for the prototype? Like, when will you get the final, I guess, bike?
Well, so this is the first like bike development that I think BMX has seen in a long time. Mm-hmm. I know that there's a few other companies that have done like prototypes, but I don't know how much testing has like gone into them. We have done so much testing. So I think once I get some testing and some baselines on this new prototype, the spec, I think, is what the final product will be. Like the production model, I'm pretty sure the spec is the same. Unless we ride it, me, Nick, Ethan ride our bikes and we're like, hey, we need to change, you know, XYZ. But I don't foresee that happening. So hopefully the production models will be for sale, you know, late this year, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal, but obviously with production and shipping and all that good stuff, it takes time, but
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
So my next question is kind of, I just wrote USAC down because I did look, Google you, not to sound creepy, but I did Google you because you had a picture of you in a USA jersey, and Jethro, you know, mentioned on a discussion that he was on Team USA. But I kind of want to talk a little bit about kind of the steps of racing. So obviously in the cycling world, there are different sanctioning bodies that produce races, and you can gain points to eventually get up to the elite level. And so, and again, please correct me if I'm wrong. I do race myself, but I typically don't race with you, Zach. But USA Cycling is a sanctioning body that is a point system in all different disciplines, correct? And BMX is part of that, correct? So do you want to let our listeners know kind of how, I guess, the different levels of BMX racing, you know, what those are?
Yeah, so for USA Cycling specifically, they have three classes. So it's Junior Elite, U23, and then Elite, which is what I am. So like if you go to a World Cup, like when I go to a World Cup, there's no amateur racing. It's literally just juniors, or I'm sorry, U23s and Elite. So they don't even have juniors at a World Cup.
Okay.
At World Champs, they have juniors. So junior it's based off of birth year, and it's 17 and 18 year olds, I believe. I think it's 17, 18. And then U23 is obviously under 23, but birth year. And then Elite is anyone older than that or anyone who wants to race it from a younger age. So some people don't even race junior. They'll just go straight to Elite. Some people skip U23. They'll go straight to Elite. But as for like racing, like qualifying to race a class, it's kind of weird because anyone can go out and race Elite. Like you can sign up and race Elite if you want.
I don't know if I want that.
Yeah,
it might be entertaining.
So, but it's weird because there's no like qualification required. Yeah. And so like anyone can turn pro and say I'm a professional BMX racer.
Yeah.
But obviously competing at that level is a little bit of a different story. It's hard, right? Like it's not just you can't just turn pro and then be like good, but it's but yeah, the points, there's no actual qualification. I don't know if it's the same in like other disciplines. Like I don't know if you can just sign up to race like pro.
No, you have to gain, I believe, enough points in the USAC sanctioning system.
Yeah, so it is not like that at all. But also so BMX is a bit different. I think I haven't raced any other disciplines specifically, but so all of the USA BMX races, those are not run by USA Cycling. It's totally different. It's so like the only races that I'm with USA Cycling are international.
Okay. Interesting. So interesting. Okay.
Yes. So there's three this year for USA BMX. There's three races where we have UCI races on Sunday. And so there will be USA Cycling people at those races, but it's not like we wear our USA jerseys. We still wear our, like I'll wear my Huffy jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit weird. It's a bit confusing. I think that because USA BMX is so big and dominant in the space of like the actual series, that like USA Cycling kind of just stays out of it. And then mm-hmm. yeah, like I said, international stuff, USA Cycling, domestic stuff, USA BMX.
I'm glad that we talked about that because in my brain, for most of the cycling disciplines, cyclocross to road racing to even mountain biking, I feel like USAC is not what BMX, you just described. So that's good. Yeah. All right, listeners, you heard it from Carly. So I just wrote this down because it just popped into my head. You have mentioned, like I said, pump track versus a BMX track. So what is the difference, or is it bug? What's the difference between a pump track and a BMX track?
So a pump track is just like a single lane track, and it's a loop, and you can do as many loops as you want. I love pump track. It's just to ride, just to have fun, to flow. It's great. I raced pump track world champs in 2022 and in 2023. In 2022, I went to Santiago, Chile. And in 2023, I got to go to Austria, which was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing. So, pump track. So like the Velo Solutions pump tracks, they're all paved. You'll find some dirt pump tracks, but again, with the maintenance, it's tough. And so typically like cities will just pave the pump track. So there's, a pump track actually in Batesville, Indiana, that they just put in a couple, I guess it's been a year and a half. And so that's pretty close to me actually. And I'll go ride there. It's small. And it's, you can't really go super fast. You can't carry a ton of speed, but it's still fun to go and mess around on. And then there's another one that they just put in Greenfield.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah.
And that's Pump Tracks USA. So Pump Tracks USA actually is sponsoring me this year as well. So they're kind of helping to support me, which is really cool. I'm trying to think of other pump tracks in Indiana. I think there's probably, I want to say I've seen videos of something further north, but I'm not 100% sure. Sure. Can you?
Maybe. I know there's stuff up in Warsaw.
Is there a Velo Solutions pump track up there?
I'm not sure, but I know that there's stuff up there. And then I was told at the new bike park out in Lebanon, Indiana, they're trying to get a pump track as well put in there.
Okay.
I believe Pump Track US, I think. I don't know.
Yeah,
I should know.
Probably.
He's
always trying to like branch out and get new pump tracks built. He's awesome at it. Velo Solutions pump tracks, I don't know if you've seen videos, it's usually they have like a red line. They're pretty intimidating for a new rider. So like you got really huge corners and really deep corners. And Pump Tracks USA, he does a really good job of making it like not, I shouldn't say easy, but like more welcoming to a new rider. So like they have one in Springboro, Ohio that I ride a lot and it's so fun for beginners, but it's also so fun for me. Like I'm able to, you know, hit some big transfers and the, you know, you have beginners, you have people on rollerblades who will come out and they're riding the pump track on rollerblades.
Wow.
It's cool. And like I said, it's inclusive for so many people. Yeah. So pump track's really fun because of that. BMX, I think, is maybe a bit more intimidating when you pull up to the track and you see people, you know, in race gear and, you know, fully kitted and
full face helmet or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So whereas like pump track is, like I said, a bit more welcoming, I think.
Absolutely. So since you kind of talked about this inclusivity of having a variety of different types of individuals at pump tracks, how can somebody get involved with BMX? Like how could I start? How could a roadie like me start racing? Or even like, you know, I'm intimidated by it. It looks terrifying. How could somebody like myself or somebody who doesn't even, you know, really ride or race, how could they get involved with BMX?
I mean, it's hard because I was, as you were asking that question, I was thinking about it. I was like, oh, well, you could just go to the track, but you can't because there's not always people there. And so like, if you go to Columbus, it's fenced in. And I think that someone who is new to the sport, like for me, if I want to figure out when practices, I just hop on Facebook and I look up Columbus BMX, but not everybody's going to know that, you know, a track has a Facebook page. And I think that's kind of like a bummer because at schools you have, you know, people promoting other sports and that's how people get into other sports. Whereas like BMX, unless you have like someone that you know who races, or you have a direct connection, or you have a track right next to your house and you can see when it's open, I think that it's hard to get into it just because you simply don't know when and to go to the track, you know what I mean? So but yeah, I mean, Facebook, for anyone listening, Facebook is a good place to start. Like if you have a local track and you want to figure out when race schedules are, typically they'll post it on their Facebook pages. I think USA BMX has a spot on their website where they are supposed to update schedules and whatnot. I've never actually used that feature because, like I said, I just hop on Facebook. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there's places where you can find tracks, you can find schedules. But yeah, it's just, you got to do a little bit of digging, which makes it difficult, obviously, yeah. If it's, you know, BMX or school basketball, kids yeah. probably going to go play school basketball, yeah. you know?
Well, I have had this discussion with many other individuals on our podcast. But I feel that the state of Indiana is a traditional ball and stick sport state.
Yes.
And trying to get kids on bikes in my previous job in the interscholastic, you know, middle school and high school, it was difficult because baseball, cross country, I mean, here in Terre Haute, we have Laverne Gibson, which is a huge NCAA venue for cross country. And we get thousands of kids that come in.
Yeah.
So it is, you're right. It is a struggle, I think, for a lot of people to maybe find where to begin, but maybe they'll listen to our podcast and they'll learn. So my next question is, and of course now it left my brain, which I'll edit this out. What was I going to ask you? So as you mentioned, you started at a young age, you're still racing, you're racing for Huffy. Have you ever considered, since we have, for example, Marion University here, I know that they have a collegiate program for cyclists, and they do want cyclists of multiple disciplines, because I've had discussions with the university about their cycling team. Have you ever considered going collegiate?
Yeah, I not seriously, because yeah. first of all, if I was going to go to school, I would want to know exactly what I wanted to do. I'm in a really good position where I get to ride my bike. Yeah. I get to travel. I get to coach and make money coaching as well. And I think that it would be really hard for me to commit to going to school because mm-hmm. number one, I would want to put all of my energy into it. But number two, with those collegiate teams, a lot of times you aren't just simply allowed to race one discipline.
Correct. Yeah.
And that is not, I wouldn't want to hinder any BMX training sure. because I'm doing another type of, you know, cycling. Sure. And I think that it would be super fun if I wasn't as serious about BMX as I am, mm-hmm. but because I am, like, if I was just racing BMX, just, you know, for fun or whatever, then yeah, 100%. But because I want to be, you know, as good as I can be at BMX, I think it'd be hard if I had to also do, you know, dual slalom and, yeah. and cross country and, you know, XYZ. Like, it would be a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, the training would go against it.
Yeah.
Itself. You know what Absolutely. I mean? It wouldn't. Yeah. It would be a lot.
Yeah. No, that's something that Marion spoke to me about. This was a couple of years ago because I had yeah. some Nike kids wanting to go to Marion to, yeah. to race BMX or race, you know, downhill or race, you know, mountain bike. And they responded, they want, you know, students and athletes to be well-versed in a lot of disciplines. Yeah. And it meant cyclocross, road racing, crit racing, you know, all this other stuff. And it makes sense. But there were students that focused specifically on, you know, a discipline. So no, I totally, totally understand that and totally get it. So my next question is how do you train? Don't give specifics, but you know, like you said, traveling to a track is sometimes very difficult, not difficult, but just it's a long drive. Do yeah. you do a lot of training at home? Do you do, you know, things, obviously, you know, maybe lifting weights and interval training? What does training look like for a BMX elite athlete?
So it's a lot of gym time. So I lift, I do sprints, you know, just on flat ground. I have a watt bike. So watt bike sprints, roller sprints. I'm sure you've seen rollers. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've ridden rollers.
Yep.
lots of times. Yeah. and then obviously as much track time as I can get. So, in the summer, you know, sometimes I'm driving to Louisville 3 days a week, which is a lot of gas, a lot of time, but it's worth it to me because I think that, you know, my boyfriend and I would pick up and move to Florida mm-hmm. in a minute. And so I could ride year round, but yeah. I really, really like where I live. And I also am really close with my family. My whole family's here. And so it would be really hard for me to just like leave. I don't think that I would be as happy. You know what I mean? So it's kind of just like, okay, well, I'm just sacrificing this gas money and this time so that I can live here with my family and stay in Indiana. So, yeah, but I don't, I totally forget what your question even was.
Oh, just how you train.
Sorry, I went totally off.
Okay.
I do that a lot. But yeah, so a lot of riding. Like I went to Florida for 6 weeks so I could get away from the winter,
yeah,
which was really nice. Got some good training in. So yeah, I just make do with what I got. And if it's bad weather and I have to go somewhere, then I go somewhere. But
yeah,
the most important thing, like I said, I want to stay here in Indiana with my family and, you know, gym, track, sprints.
Nice. Yeah. I just had a couple of girlfriends drive down to Florida to go to this long paved trail because they were so sick of the winter and it was sunshine and they had the most incredible trip because of the weather. So I totally get it. Okay. When you train, what's your favorite training snack?
Oh, my favorite training snack. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh man.
Like my friend loves Uncrustables. She loves Uncrustables. I don't know. I've never had one.
So it's really hard. Like I have been trying so much to eat more when I'm actually like having a session because I track everything. I track my macros. And for a long time I was like having a hard time figuring out like, okay, how much should I eat? Because like I'm really small. I'm 4'11" and I don't like my resting metabolic rate is not high.
Yeah.
But like I like food more than anyone you have ever met. I promise. Like I love food so much. And like it was kind of like, it's a mental battle to see like, okay, well, I need to eat, but like how much is too much kind of thing. So I don't really snack during my sessions. I would say like on my way back from a heavy session at the track, like I'm stopping at Chipotle every time. that's the post session snack, but I guess meal, not snack. But yeah, I've tried to have like some type of carb with me at the track to eat, to munch on. But I usually just end up eating it all when I'm finished because like I said, it's hard to eat during a session for me. But yeah, I think Chipotle is the answer to that. It's not a snack. It's, you know, post-session meal.
I just saw this guy on Instagram. I can't remember his name, but he's riding his bike a very long distance and bike packing and he's only eating Chipotle.
Oh my gosh. I would feel so sick if I did that.
Yeah. He was just riding with like giant jumbo burritos and just bike packing and stopping at like each, the start and finish were Chipotle. Yeah. So
that is actually awesome.
Yeah. Right.
When I'm done racing BMX, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to do either road biking or cross country, something where I can burn thousands and thousands of calories so I can eat thousands and thousands of calories.
So that was actually a question. So you only really race and ride BMX. You don't do any other type of cycling discipline?
No, like I said, I raced pump track world champs the last couple of years, which has been really fun. Actually, the first year at Pump Track Worlds, I had a really, really bad concussion. I knocked myself out, had a seizure on the track. And then, it was not good. So, so pump track is really fun, but it's a bit scary because you're going so fast on such a tight track. And anytime that you crash going fast on a pump track at race pace, like it's never a small crash. So, I've kind of like in Austria and every picture I'm pulling brakes in the corners because I'm scared, you know, like it was really hard to race it. But as for like disciplines that are fully like I'm on a different bike, like, I haven't really dabbled in anything too much. My dad is always like, you need to race downhill. But it's so different that like if I at some point was going to do that, I would have to be fully like finished with BMX because the training just would not. It wouldn't line up the same way. I would be, you know, training a lot of slow twitch muscles probably because it's not, you know, a 35-second race. It's a 3.5-minute race. And so it's just different.
Yeah, no, I was going to say join the Brown County Enduro in May that Brown County Bikes is hosting. Then I thought it's probably a complete, like, it'd be like a road biker trying to go race.
I wish that I could, like, my coach is always on me. He's like, you need to chill. Like, just chill. And I'm like, but I want to do more.
Yeah. You're like, rest day. What's that?
I hate rest days.
Oh, I know. A lot of cyclists do.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
So my next question is, you know, I kind of brought up the Brown County Enduro. They talk about how they had the biggest female turnout. How can we get more women into BMX?
I mean, it's hard because I think that with, I do a lot of coaching all over the place, not just in Indiana, but all over the country. And I have all girls clinics that I'll do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times girls are very intimidated to ride with boys.
Oh yeah.
And it's hard with BMX because it is male dominated. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, it's very rare that I go to a local track and they have a group of more than like two or three girls. And so for me, like when I was growing up, I had always just rode with boys. And so it didn't even really cross my mind. Like from a young age, I was just riding with the dudes, like whatever, you know, but I think especially for like an older, not older, but like a teenage girl who wants to get into BMX, I think that's really hard when it's a male dominated sport. There's no other girls there and you're new, right? Like that's intimidating. So I think that like having, I don't know, it may be presenting some type of flyer to schools or, you know, having a way to communicate with people as a group and not just like a singular person, like, hey, you one girl, like you should come out and ride this track, because that's not going to happen. But if you present it to a group of kids and all of them are interested, then maybe you'd have more luck. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think singling out one person and trying to get one person to race, because I've tried like so much. There's a little girl on my grandma's street, and I bought her a BMX bike, and I was like, oh, BMX track.
Yeah.
And she did for a while. And then all of her friends did cheer. And so she ended up doing cheer, which is, you know, that's cool. That's fine. But I think that you need to have, especially for, like I said, girls in a male dominated sport, if you had a group of girls who raced and rode and could promote the sport together, I think that would be really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. My friend Marissa, who we interviewed for Midwest Diva, which is a development team for the youth here in Indianapolis. And they focus mostly on track because they have Major Taylor and Marion.
Yeah.
But they do a lot of cyclocross, but she is specifically working really hard to create what you just said, which is having a group of girls, whether they're braiding their hair, putting things in it, painting nails at practice, and just going for ice cream rides. They get the Marion, the female riders from Marion to go with them to go on these rides. And it's just a chance, like you said, for these girls just to kind of hang out and be on bikes.
So. Yeah. I think that's so like, the group thing would be ideal because like I said, I think a lot of girls are intimidated, you know, and I mean, rightfully so. Like I would be too, if I was just getting into, to BMX, you know?
Yeah. I ride with mostly guys as well, you know, road and gravel. And I'm like you, I'm just one of the dudes, you know, I just whatever, you know, and I have had discussions with females that want to start riding, and it's scary. You know, you don't know if you know what's going to happen and if you're going to keep up or if you're strong enough or, you know, whatever. So no, I totally understand that. Okay. So my next kind of discussion is a good transition. What are some of your struggles and fears? Like, I know it's kind of a, you know, a difficult question to ask, but like, for example, you mentioned earlier, you know, you had a not great of a, you know, situation where you got a concussion, but it impacted your racing because you were nervous. What are some of the fears and struggles you have?
So I think my biggest fear, and it sounds silly, but I think my biggest fear with just my sport in general is like not reaching my potential. Like that is like my biggest fear. And I want to get to the highest level that I can as a person, as an athlete in the sport. Because it's, you know, I love BMX and I want to go as far as I can with it. So, which again, sounds silly. As for like the concussion stuff and the injuries, that was really, really scary when it happened. And it was really hard to come back from that. And it was a big learning experience because I there are a lot of things outside of BMX that I love. Like I said, I love my family. I love spending time with my family. I like playing family tennis. I like rollerblading with my mom and my sister. I like hiking. I have 4 St. Bernards that I love to spend time with.
4 St. Bernards.
Yeah. And so like, there's just so many things outside of BMX that make me happy. Now, obviously BMX is my, you know, it's my passion. It's what I love, but I would never want to like after Chile, I was like, wow, like I don't want BMX to be the reason that like, I can't do something else. Like, I don't want to hurt myself and then like not be able to do these other things that I love. And so there was like a period of time where like, I really didn't know what was going to happen because I got cleared from my concussion in Chile and I went to Florida in 2023 at the beginning of 2023 to train for the winter. And I didn't know, but I was having vestibular issues. And so like I had balance problems. My pupils were 2 different sizes, but I had no clue. And so I was riding and my balance was off and I hit my head again. And then after that, I was like, oh my gosh, like I was petrified to ride. Like I would get on top of the starting hill and I'm like shaking, you know, cause it was scary. And it was kind of like, I had to step back and say like, okay, this isn't me just falling over my bike. Like I'm actually having like vestibular problems. And so I had to go to the chiropractor. I still do my vestibular physical therapy every single day.
Yeah.
And so there were just things that I had to do to tackle, you know, the recovery, like one step at a time, just small steps. And it was hard because at the same time, there were girls that I race in the States who were like going to international races and racing internationally. And I literally couldn't jump anything on my bike because I felt like I was going to fall over. And so it was hard, but I don't know, looking back at any wreck that I've had, any fall, anything bad that's like happened, I think that I am the athlete and the person that I am because of those things. And so like, of course you never want to get hurt. You never want to, you know, crash, but like when you do, there's always something you can like take from it and learn and grow. And so I'm not really so much scared of that part of it anymore. But yeah, like I said, seriously, like I want to reach my potential, you know,
yeah.
that's my biggest fear.
So speaking of helmets, I did some research about helmets and Virginia Tech had this great test that they did on like 200 helmets and they rated it based off of all these different parameters and whatnot. Yeah. But what type of helmet do you typically race and ride with? Is it always a full face helmet? And what other safety gear do you wear to protect yourself?
Yeah. So it's always a full face helmet. People who wear half shells, they stress me out. I'm like, don't you like your teeth? Like, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
It's so scary. Cause I've seen like so many of my freestyle friends have knocked teeth out before. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, full face. I wear the Bell Full 10. I love it. I've crashed in it many times and it's saved me many times. I also wear just like elbow pads, knee pads. And then I wear a cue collar. I don't know if you've ever seen cue collars. So it popped up on Instagram as an ad of the, like, I don't know, 2 years ago, probably.
Your phone was listening to you. I'll get ads on my phone.
My concussions. I was talking about my concussion. Cue collar thing popped up. But yeah, so a cue collar, it basically is like this plastic and metal or rubber and metal, thing that looks like a horseshoe. It goes around your neck. Yeah. I reached out to him. I was like, hey, will you send me one of these? I want to try it. Like it's explain my concussion issues. And I also used to get constant migraines from riding constant. And so they sent me one and I wear one now and it squeezes your jugular and it makes your brain retain a little bit more blood than usual. And so if you are to fall, your brain, essentially the idea is that it won't bounce around as much. And same thing, like if I case a big jump, like my brain isn't going to bounce around as much, theoretically. And so I told my dad and I like showed him, he was like, oh, that's not going to like, that's a cop out. Like they're just, you know, it's not going to work. And I was like, I don't know, like, I'm going to try it. And I am fully sold on it. Like anyone listening with, headaches from riding or concussion problems, get a cue collar. They're amazing. It's a little bit weird at first because it kind of feels like, you know, like someone's squeezing your neck a bit, but, yeah, I don't get headaches from riding anymore. I have hit my head with it on. I hit my head in, Texas last year wearing the Q collar. And immediately I was like, I need someone to test me for concussion symptoms. Like, I'm not going to mess around with concussion stuff. And they tested me. Everything came back good. I was totally fine. Fully sold on the Q collar. But yeah, helmet, full face helmet, always Q collar, elbow pads, knee pads. This is like super tiny. It literally just goes over my neck. It's like, it looks like a collar, a Q collar. Okay. It looks like a collar and it just squeezes. And then there's an opening in the front. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's, I wish I had it with me. I don't, but I would show you.
I can put some information in the description of the podcast. No, that's great. I've learned a lot about helmets and the different types of helmets that are not full face. But for our listeners, I could drop the link in the description as well. But Virginia Tech did this incredible test on like 200 helmets, and it was really neat to learn about the different styles and, you know, the MIPS, which is a certain type of technology too, even that wave cell that came out with Bontrager and Trek. It's neat to hear and listen about different helmets that are out there to protect your head, because it's important.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, I've got a couple more questions, and then I promise you we will be complete with this call. And I apologize, my cat is running around. Of course. What is your favorite place that you've ever raced?
Oh my gosh!
I know.
Question? That's crazy. Okay, but
you traveled a lot of really cool places.
Yeah. So, okay, are we talking like track specifically, or like country?
Let's just do your favorite place ever just to race.
Oh, man.
I'll add Jeopardy music for this.
Oh my goodness. I don't know.
Or maybe what's your favorite memory?
That's even harder.
Yeah.
I think, I got to go to New Zealand last year.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, and it was amazing. The country was amazing. The weather was amazing. The track was really fun. It wasn't my favorite race,
mm-hmm.
but it was my favorite place that I've been, yeah. I think. I got to ride a really, really fun track in France, in Besançon, France. And that track was super fun. I had a chance to ride that track for like 2 weeks, which was just amazing. But I don't know, like, I have ridden so many really cool places, and I don't think that I could just like pick one track and be like, I'm going to ride here for the rest of my life. Like, there's so many places that are so fun for different reasons. I would say New Zealand is the coolest place, just overall the coolest trip. Track was, like I said, amazing, but maybe, oh, I don't know. If I could like mix straights, like if I could take like the first straight from Besançon and like the second straight from New Zealand and the third straight from, you know, mix them all together.
Sure. So the track in France that you just said that was your favorite, what made it your favorite? Well, like what were the qualities of the track and like the design of it that made it special?
So like I had never been to Europe before that trip. That was my first trip to Europe. And everyone always talks about how intimidating these European tracks are and how big everything is and scary. And I, you know, went to the track and there was this triple into the first corner and it was huge. And there were people who I'd seen videos of people jumping it. And I was like, oh my gosh, like that thing is giant. Like there's no way I can jump that. And then like you ride the track and everything is built perfect.
Yeah.
And it's perfect. It's perfection. And so, I think that especially that like Besançon specifically stands out because there were like three triples on that track that were big and they were built perfect. And you could just absolutely sky them. Like it was just flowy and, like lippy jumps, but not to the point where it was like, you know, triangles for the jumps. Sure. Like they were so smooth and flowy, and yeah, it was so much fun to ride. I would love to go back there.
Well, maybe you will someday.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. I have a couple more. What's next for you this year? What's your race season look like?
My schedule, I was just talking yesterday to some of my friends about this. Like, I literally am home for like 4 weeks in the span of 6 months.
Wow.
It's insane. Like, insane. So, which is kind of like, it's exciting, but also, like I told you, I like being home. I like hanging out with my family. So it will also be like a bit weird at points, but I'm lucky because my boyfriend is able to work remotely. Mm-hmm. And so he gets to come with me to like most of my races, even sure. international stuff. So that's really good. That helps a lot. But I go to Colorado Springs for like a USAC testing camp on the 9th. And then I go straight to Tulsa for another camp. And then I go straight to South Carolina. And then I'm home for a week. And then I go to Belgium, France. And then I go straight to California. And then I'm home for a week. And then I go to Tulsa again. Yeah. So it's kind of crazy. Like it's a lot of like 3 and 4 week trips.
Yeah.
And then like weeks in between. So
that's great.
Yeah. But internationally this year, I'll get to go to France, Argentina, which Argentina is amazing. I've been to that race before and it's really fun. Really cool country. It cooler than I ever could have like yeah. imagined. So if you ever get to go to Argentina, go. and then Denmark for world champs and the Netherlands. So it'll be cool. It'll be a fun year.
Very busy schedule. So yeah. on top of that, you are still doing clinics and other things. I know you briefly mentioned it earlier, but just how we talked about how to get more girls involved, but just in general, how to start even in this discipline. What are some of the clinics that you could recommend for people to join?
That's another thing. Like with the coaching and the clinics that I do, it's typically, you know, I'll do either an all girls clinic and then like I'll do, you know, a beginner or an intermediate clinic, but there's not really like a lot of clinics that you can just attend. It's hard to find them. Mm-hmm. So like, I know that there's some tracks who the track operator will run like weekly clinics, and that's awesome. Like for any kid who has a track that does that, especially a new rider, like I think that's such a cool opportunity. Growing up, I literally went to one clinic ever, and I had kind of a coach for like a couple of months, but it wasn't really. It's with BMX, it's not like other sports where you have a coach and you have a team and you have this whole program. It's kind of like every man for themselves. Yeah. So it can be tricky, but yeah, I think again, Facebook page is the best place to start if you have a local track and you're looking for coaching or clinics or whatever, because even if you have a pro coming to the track to coach, typically the Facebook page will post that. So yeah. It's a good place to start.
Yeah, no. So you heard it, Indiana. Facebook is the go-to place to find yep. out information. So
go to your track's Facebook.
yeah, yeah. So I guess the final thing is we kind of, you know, talked a little bit earlier, but the main point that you said is just to get involved and volunteer at your local tracks if you have them, or even at a race that maybe is nearby you. Is there any other thing that you could recommend for the state of Indiana to get involved with BMX?
I mean, I don't know. I think that it's like I said, I think you need a group. I think that's the most important thing. You need a group of people to come together and kind of push it, because I think that's the way to reach the most amount of people. But to anyone listening who is maybe thinking about trying BMX or has wanted to try it, just do it. Like go to your track. Say what's up to a couple of people. Like, it is so fun. Everyone is going to be welcoming. Everyone at the track is cool. Like, I've never had someone at the track be rude or anything. Like, it's a fun atmosphere. And I think that if you get out there and you try it, that's when people get hooked. It's just that initial, that initial push.
Just do it. Just like Nike
just
said.
Do it.
Not sponsored by Nike, but just do it. Well, I am just beyond tickled pink to talk to you about everything we've talked about today. And I'm looking forward to following your races and what you do. And I'm excited, like I said, to see a strong female inspiring other females, but also just kicking butt. So I wish you the best of luck. And like I said, I'll edit this and get it out. But I am beyond excited to talk about BMX, because I feel like there's just such a history in the state.
Yeah, definitely.
So, well, good luck to you. And I will talk to you soon. And I hope you have a great week and race season.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Take care.
Thanks. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. We hope you really enjoyed this podcast. For more information about our organization and other future podcasts, visit www.bicycleindiana.org. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you have a really great day.